Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
My name's Craig Charles. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hello, my name's Robert Llewellyn. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9 Joy. I got it wrong. Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. And thanks to the guys from Stand Up Straight, Michelle and Sarah, for another great show. And of course, that was Red Dwarfs when they were over here last year, 2012, just doing a bit of Sci-Fi and Squeam tagging. Now, tonight it's Level Up, brothers and sisters. Let's all join together and unite on video games and something I don't know enough about. Hey, I'm slowly learning. And as a learner, I have three people in the studio to help me out to make sure that they kick me on this one. And we've got Dylan. Dill Adler from Generation Next.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about some video games, but I've got some awesome people who are here as well who know their stuff, so I'm going to be quite
intimidated in a good way.
In a great way, actually. It's good to have some fellow geeks here with me.
Yeah, and you're going to be part of our new segment we hope to do monthly, and that is Dill Stick.
Dill Stick, that's right.
Is it
right.
Dill Shtick or Dill Stick?
Dill Stick,
as
you know.
A reference to
well, a controller pad. Why? What are you thinking, Sonia?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not thinking
I was going to say, that's a little risque. Like,
won't go there. And we have the guys again from New Game Plus. Welcome to Kirsty and Jason.
Hello, it's great to be back. We really can't stay away, can we?
No. Well, it's once every 3 months at this rate.
But pretty much, yes.
It's great. And it's good to have you here. You're going to be helping us debrief. Well, you're going to be debriefing here about something called PAX. Yes. PAX.
PAX Oz, yeah.
Word.
What?
I don't know. I was trying to be a cool kid. But yes, PAX Oz, the first PAX off American shores, which was why it was a bit of a big deal.
They actually chose it based on merchandise figures. They went in and said, which international country buys the most merchandise out of America? And Australia flogged it. There wasn't even a competition. Australia was by far the people outside of America who buy PAX merchandise the most. And that was probably
the main
thing they based their choice on. So.
Mm-hmm. Sales will go there.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, they knew that they'd have... It's the same with Rooster Teeth. Like, they've got huge communities out here, surprisingly huge communities, and I guess they just said, well, let's up and do it. I mean, the Rooster Teeth guys are out here for every convention. You've probably seen them at the Hunnabies booth there.
Sonia,
they're here like every 3 months. Almost as often as we are on Joy FM.
Yeah. Jeez, that was a solid plug there, yeah.
So if you have had a PAX experience, well, the first of hopefully many for years to come, here in Melbourne, or Batmania, let us know. You can always join us and we'll chat with you on air on 0427 Joy 949, or you can phone Jerry. Oh, sorry, his name's not Jerry, it's Luigi tonight. Luigi,
it's
without
the year of Luigi.
Without his Mario. But he's out there at the desk waiting for your call, 1300 Joy 949. He's looking pretty colourful. He's got the white gloves on. And
we should get Charles Martinet to call him once and do the voice for you.
Oh, we should. Yeah. He loves doing that.
He does. You just can't stop him. Like,
you literally can't stop
him. Because I was still, remember the when we were in E3 last year, he was on the phone to a little girl at the hotel. So a guy had kind of asked him, look, my daughter's a big Mario fan. Could you please leave her a voicemail? So I'd planned with his wife and everything, don't answer the phone. Of course, Charles Martinet had graciously left a really long message about how, you know, he really liked this girl and he wish, you know, she was here in Super Mario Land. Now his daughter then called him and said, are you bringing Mario home?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I saw him on the show floor and, you just hear him go, now she thinks I'm bringing her home. I'm like, that's funny.
That's cute. And a little bag. Kit bag, of course.
Smuggle Italian people back
just
from
straight
America,
down the pipes, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how
it works. Warp zone.
Bleep,
bleep. Oh, no, I won't even try to make those special effect sounds. It's not going to work. Look, also later on the show, we have an interview exclusive with Jason Trost. He's the actor, director, producer. I think he even held the camera for his very own film called All Superheroes Must Die. And that is going to be out soon, August the 16th, here in Batmania. So we're looking forward to that. It's a bit of a twist on the superhero myth. Now, I know that doesn't have much to do with video games, but he did let out a little secret that he's a Tetris fan. person, a tetrified person,
a tetraphilia.
A tetraphilia. No,
probably not the same thing. Yeah,
I've seen that video.
Tetris or no? Nah, we shouldn't go.
I don't know.
That's fine. Let's just leave that.
But apparently, you can end up hallucinating from too much Tetris.
I think it's the song. I think there's like underneath it, it's a secret like Russian conspiracy to indoctrinate the Western audiences, and like underneath there's just like anti-capitalist messages.
Well, yeah, but you know that, right? That Tetris was a reflection of American business life in the 1980s. Yeah. It was about all of this information coming down and you getting rid onto a table and you getting rid of that information as quickly as possible. So the Tetris playboard is a desk and the Tetris blocks are like contracts and paperwork.
See, this is why you're here in the studio, Kirsty and Jason and Dill, of course.
Well, that's actually new information. I didn't know that. I know that like when they first brought out Tetris, there was a whole bit of controversy about it with Atari, but I didn't actually know that was the...
Oh, well, that's the rumour. That's the joke.
Rumor.
That's the...
Yeah, it's one of those games that really does... It just transcends. If there's ever a perfect game, if anyone ever says, what's the best game ever made? Well, you've got to say Tetris because everything about it just screams, I'm going to play another round.
It's addictive.
It's interesting because there's no great win state in Tetris either. You can't win Tetris. Like, there's game modes where they encourage a win state. But in its purest form, there is no win state. So it's a never-ending punishing cycle.
I did see there was a Tetris documentary. They had at Acme last year. I don't know if you guys saw that one.
I saw it there, but I never got around to it.
Wow, it was just fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely. That's where the hallucinations came in a bit later after watching too much of that. Yeah, so it's a pretty full show, but PAX, look, let's start the debrief, I think, guys.
Well, I don't know. I guess the simplest way I've described it so far was going into it, I had a lot of reservations. I didn't think an American convention run by Americans with an American style could work. I didn't think that it was going to get over the line.
There was also a big controversy to do with PAX and the owners of PAX and about 2-3 weeks out of PAX Oz starting. But PAX Oz had sold out as well. And I guess that was another scare because we had Oz Comic Con last year, of course, and that was overcrowded, had a lot of crowding issues.
They were overwhelmed.
You know, it's like, could they do it here in Australia? You know, could they handle that number of people at the showgrounds? And
besides the lines for the panels, I think they underestimated the popularity of the panels. Besides that, and besides some of the local enforcers who were about ready to get a punch in the head sometimes.
They were the volunteers.
They were the volunteers.
Yes.
Like,
enforcers.
And like, most of them were great. The American ones were top
above
notch.
And beyond. Yep.
Some of the other, and again, I'm not saying this is entitled media. There's been a terrible piece on, I think it was Retro Domination or Console Domination, just self-entitled media dribble. It's like, but we're media. We're supposed to be treated special. PAX is never about that. Don't get me wrong. And so
it's
knew that going.
It's more community orientated.
It always has been. Yeah. And that's the one thing that it succeeded in. Like, despite those two, my big main arguments against it, everything else nailed it. It was a celebration of the neckbeard. And that's what it needed to be, and it was. But at the same time, you could feel comfortable bringing kids down. You could feel comfortable bringing the family in. And I think
it had a great atmosphere,
Well, the best example I can think, and I think I actually mentioned this on the show, was Ray Johnson, who does some stuff for us, based normally out of Sydney. She was down here cosplaying, and she took a photo with someone, and she put her passes down in her bag, and she took the photo, and then she went back to her bag. The passes were gone. Right.
Oh.
And what? And so she's freaking out, and she's like, you know, humanity sucks. You know. Blah.
Yep.
She goes to the ticket booth and says, "Hi, look, I've lost my passes. Here's my name." And they go, "No, here they are. Someone brought them in. They must have they thought that somebody had lost them. Like they were lying on the floor next to her bag."
Right.
And they're like, "So they thought somebody lost them, brought them back."
Well, there you go.
Well, they're the kind of people, because you could have literally gone to Flinders Street Station and sold them for $100.
Were going for a 3-day PAX pass was going for $500 on eBay.
Wow.
In the lead up to PAX Oz. Because they sold out within a month or 2 weeks. PAX passes had sold out.
Yeah.
And then I got all of these.
Now, you can't see these
on radio.
Okay,
so this is not a visual medium, you idiots. But
there's about 10 passes and she's holding on to
those
for dear
life.
Everything but BYOC. And at the moment, I still don't have my VIP pass.
Yeah, so she was working for a few other people, plus we had media, plus she was a speaker, plus everybody started giving their passes. So there were special guests. She even got the medical one.
Yeah, that was the best one.
For the poor person, she bashed to get that.
Yeah, that was worth it. And the all access. Damn, I wish I had that earlier.
Yeah.
So I made it my mission. Once I got 3 or 4 handed to me, I started collecting them. Yeah. So I'm just short. I'm probably never going to get an enforcer badge because, I would understand that. Being an enforcer, I'd like to keep my badge.
Yeah.
As a
collect them every year.
But stuff like exhibitor. These are kind of the throwaway ones.
Yeah. Well, you haven't thrown them away, Kirsty.
Absolutely not. I'm also guarding this. Now, again, not a visual medium. Yeah. This is a BioWare badge, and apparently people were offering $150 for these by the end of the convention.
Save it for a rainy day.
I don't know why.
It's BioWare. Like, they have that kind of following. The Mass Effect kids that is massive. In the head. Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not yellow and gold to go for the Aussie. But, you know, now we're going to do a bit more debriefing a bit soon. Mm-hmm. But coming up will be Adele Sticks' debut here on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy and 94.9. Turn up the power. Oh, yeah. That's Nintendo 1992. Good times. Now, we have in the studio, of course, we've got Dill from Generation Next.
Howdy.
Dill Adler is here, and this is the first of, we hope, many Dill Stick.
Talking about everything to do with video games, news, and upcoming releases as well. It's been an interesting year for video games. We were talking about this earlier when we were briefing for the show, and it's been quite ambivalent. Like, there are certain things where we're like, yeah, wow, this game's going to be awesome, but then there are other things that are like,
Xbox One, lol.
Yeah.
X-Bone.
Yeah. Like, for instance, Sony, this is the first year in 5 years that Sony's actually turned a profit, but it's no thanks to the PlayStation. Now, look, the Vita, the PS Vita, which was a bit of a flop last year. I mean, it didn't really take off. Not too many people were going for the, everyone else was into the Nintendo DS and also games on the phone. So the Vita turned into a bit of a flop. And then there was a bit of talk that we're going to see the Vita as a controller for the PlayStation 4. But on Twitter, Shuya Yoshida, the president of Sony Computer Entertainment, said that the PS Vita is only going to be compatible as a controller for, and quoted, for games developers specifically engineered to be compatible with the, or take advantage of the PlayStation 4 device. So, I mean, I was kind of excited thinking that we're going to see the PS Vita as more like the Wii U controller, but it's not. It's not looking like that's going to happen.
As someone who slagged off the idea of the Wii U controller, and since one of our guys has been really pushing the Wii U for like live streaming and stuff, I can actually see the value of it now, because you don't have to feel bad about running past someone when you're like, oh, I've got to cut out through the room to go to the loo. I'm going to cut in front of his game. Mm. No, it's on his hand anyway. What does it matter? So I can see where it would have been so valuable, but it's such a shame that
it's going to be the next Tingle device.
But Sony do that. Sony made great hardware. They bring out these fantastic ideas, and they don't support them. And it's just like, go, be your own thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, here's a cool new idea, and we don't care anymore. Yeah. You know, it's just like, oh, what happened there? Just touching on the Xbox as well, the Xbox has scrapped its initial plans of having compulsory internet connection to be able to play the games, and which I think it's cool that they've actually scrapped that, because I know when I heard the news about the Xbox One, I was like, for shame, Microsoft, for shame. But no, it's great. And one feature that I don't know, I'm a little bit half-assed about this. The troll alert on the Xbox One. That's right. So if you have a persuasion to troll, the Xbox One has a troll detector. Well, they're talking about a troll detector. And you can actually end up playing with other trolls. Now, this feature works on a reputation system. And Microsoft Senior Product Manager Mike Lavin explained that people won't be able to gang up on one particular gamer and give them a bad reputation, but I don't know. Okay. I don't know how effective this is going to be.
How's
I think
going to work.
Sorry, if I could be that guy again, because you know, me being nerd and all. Dota 2 has a really good system for that. So if you leave games, if you are abusive on text, they'll just ban you from like chatting and stuff. But if five people on the one side report you for like no reason other than to report you, they'll look into it. Like, they'll actually, you know, skim through the games. Now, that's going to be a lot harder on Xbox.
Yeah, I was about to ask that.
Yeah.
Because there's a fair few people that would be playing the Xbox One games. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch how they're going to manage something like that.
The handy thing is going to be the fact that like Dota, because every game of Dota 2 that's ever been played is recorded. You can look back at any point and it will keep the logs. The Xbox is going to record the last 5 minutes of the any games that you played. So if you're playing online, one's got to assume it's going to a cloud server. If that's the case, then surely if there's a report based on that game, or someone says, oh, hey, this was a game where I was abused, they're going to have that. It should automatically save if a report does it. They'll check it. This is complete speculation. But if anything, Microsoft knows how to keep track of their people. That's what they do better than anything else. So
that's what the Kinect is
that's
for.
That's what the Kinect's for. Don't even get me started. So I can see that it could work, but obviously they're just trying to combat that image that anyone who plays on Xbox is a 14-year-old screaming down the microphone, you know. And yeah, and so
Which it still will be. You can watch sports and TV,
and Call of Duty, yeah.
TV.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Call of Duty, that's actually pegged on one of the top grossing new release games, the new Call of Duty Ghosts. The premise of the game is that the US is no longer the superpower of the country, of the world, and you're part of a band of mercs called Ghosts. But that's just in the single player. They haven't really released much information for multiplayer, but do we really need any information for multiplayer?
It's going to sell. They're going to sell 15 million, and it doesn't matter. Like, it's one of those, I think, because last I checked, it was Black Ops 1 was still the highest grossing entertainment property at launch for the first 24 hours.
Vibe on that. I mean, I still lose myself in that.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like Black Ops 2, I love the plus 10 system, but the pick 10 system. But a lot of Call of Duty kids hated it because I think it went against everything. And there was recently the thing on Twitter where the guy who handles weapon balancing, they nerfed the DSR sniper rifle. Death threats, like, I'm going to rape your family threats.
Whoa.
That's what happens when you annoy 14-year-old
boys. And that's what happens when you go on Twitter, because Twitter is the worst. Twitter is the devil. It was just, it's hardcore. And they have that hardcore pace. They're always going to have it. People spend millions of dollars making games that are going to be the next Call of Duty, and Call of Duty doesn't even update their engine for 4 years, so they don't care.
Staple. I mean, you get an Xbox, you get an Xbox, you get Call of Duty. You can try and play it on the PlayStation. Have fun with that.
The one thing that the PC has was Black Ops 1, particularly, you could land them, which is something that they removed from a lot of new games, that you can actually just get eight together, put them together, play them. And I think that's what has been the strength of Black Ops, and I wonder if they're going to keep that for Ghosts, because I don't know. I don't think the next generation is going to like land very much, because it means they don't get to track you online and see what you're doing. And look at your dog. How good is a dog?
Call of Duty.
Looking at some more new games that are coming out, Metal Gear Solid 5. Now, as always, this series has beautiful rendering, and this looks like it's going to be split as a two-part game. You'll be seeing some new familiar faces, like Ocelot, who's now a friend, or is he an enemy?
It's set after Peace Walker. It's 5 years after Peace Walker. All the stuff that happened in Peace Walker just gets blown up. Did you play number two, Metal Gear Solid 2? So
I did, but the thing that I have, I love the Metal Gear Solid games for about maybe a day and a half.
Yeah.
And then I just get death by cutscene, because you start playing it and it's just like, okay, cool, 5 minutes, I've walked out a corridor and now it's a world of cutscene. And then mashing the X key when Snake's in the reactor in the last game, my forearm was burning like a mofo playing that game.
You need to, become ambidextrous.
In the first one, they had the scene where you're getting tortured, and the idea is you have to fight it by pressing circle or X or whatever it was. And then in the hard mode, you had it happen three times. After the second one, they send a codec message saying, oh, we're going to help you and we're going to give you some massage to calm your thing. We'll activate the nanomachine. It vibrated on your muscle. Yeah. Kojima's one of those that just, it's all those little things. And a lot of what he does actually challenges those kind of traditional shots at masculinity. I mean, Raiden was the blonde-haired, fair-haired, of the second. And he was
a bit fabulous.
But he did that deliberately. They did that deliberately.
Cartwheels when he had no clothes on. That was fantastic.
And they did that deliberately to make, because everyone's like, oh, Metal Gear Solid's a game for blokes, But they did that deliberately to say, well, hang on, what's the difference if we make him a pretty blonde boy killing people or a big gruff man killing people?
And then you just piss on the guards' heads. That was hilarious.
Yeah, peeing on the guards' heads was good, yeah.
Well, there's actually a 9-minute trailer for this on YouTube right now. And there's the director's extended cut.
Kojima does that.
Is that the highlights of the whole thing?
Maybe a third of the opening cutscene.
The old joke was that the last cutscene of Metal Gear Solid 4 was about 45 minutes, and everyone's like, oh, it's not that long. It's probably about 42. Like, it goes, you do the last thing, you spoils fight Ocelot, and then, bad things happen, and it just goes for 45 minutes.
One last game that I really am amping on about, it's Destiny. Just before we wrap up on Dillstick, Destiny, this is, I think it's been 10 years in the making. It's from the creators of Halo and the company that brought the world Call of Duty. This game, it's set hundreds of years into the future where humanity is spread out amongst the cosmos, but now we've been pretty much blown the heck apart. And there's this mysterious orb called the Traveler, which is granted humanity a bit of a reprieve, but it looks insane. This game is I am scared that if I get this into my life, I'm going to have to clock out all my annual leave, tell my boyfriend I love him very much, and live the rest of this game life.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, my love. No, I will lock myself in my room and just be this bloodshot-eyed hermit, just caffeine-fueled craziness.
What are the release dates for that one? Is there
Are we looking? I think we're looking at later
end
on this
August.
Year.
End of August.
I thought it was a new gen title.
No, it's everything.
Next gen, and it's also going to be backwards compatible as well. So they've catered
that's
to everything.
Exciting. I shouldn't clap on air because that just sounds terrible. But thank you so much, Dill. Dillstick number one. We could go on and on, but yeah, cool. And Jason.
Well, hopefully you won't have me cutting in.
I liked it. It added to the discourse.
The discourse in a good way. Excellent. This is Sci-Fi and Scream with Joy in 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
This is Irana Gozi, creator of Guitar Hero, Rock Band, and Dance Central, and you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And yes, indeed. This is Sonia here at Sci-Fi and Scream. Now we have an interview with Jason Trost, of course, the director, creator, everything man for a film called Little Independent Gem. It's called All Superheroes Must Die. So take a listen to this. You're on Sci-Fi and Scream here in Melbourne, talking on the phone line to Jason Trost, the director, creator, amongst other things, of something called All Superheroes Must Die. That's going to start a run here at Cultastrophe in Melbourne. This is a cult film series that's running here in Melbourne, and screenings for this film will begin 16th of August 2013 at the Nova Cinema only, so it's pretty exciting. It's great to have you on the phone there, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yes, I am in Los Angeles right now. I'm tucking out in some bookstore to do this.
Now, All Superheroes Must Die. What can you tell us without giving away too much of what this film is about?
It's essentially just four superheroes that get kidnapped and stripped of all their superpowers and get thrown in an abandoned town. They've been kidnapped by their arch nemesis, who they thought was dead, and now he has them all his mercy, and they have to compete in games to try and survive the night.
It's great to see someone like, you mentioned the evil villain, Rickshaw is the name of that particular character, James Remar, and he's just brilliant. But I mean, we'll talk about the cast in a moment. To get this film happening, because often on the show here on Sci-Fi and Scream, we do interview and look at independent cinema makers, particularly ones who make horror or thrillers or science fiction and that kind of thing. Now, you're tackling the superhero action film genre. What inspired you to do that?
It's just basically what I grew up on. I grew up on a bunch of, high concept 80s action movies, and so it was pretty much second nature when someone was like, hey, we have $20,000, do you want to make a movie? And I was like, yeah, well, that's the type of movie I would want to make. In retrospect, I probably should have had $20 million to make it, but I'm definitely proud that I tried anyway.
Well, I had to take a double take when I looked online to see what your budget was. $20,000, I thought, oh, it must be a misprint in Wikipedia. There must be a zero or two missing.
Unfortunately.
It is astonishing what you have done with that limited resources.
Well, thanks. And also, it was such a quick thing. Like, we had the money, but we had such a short time frame. It's like, do you have any ideas? We have $20,000, and we have to have this all shot and done in 2 months.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had to write the script and shoot the movie in that time. So would I have done some things different if I had more time and money? Absolutely, but I'm very proud of what I did with the restraint.
All right. So I didn't realize that it took 2 months and you had to script it. So did you have any ideas beforehand of what the story would be about?
Yeah, I always kind of had this idea kicking around that I never fleshed out. And then I was like, well, now I have a week to flesh it out and write it. Let's try it and see how we do that for, hundredth of the budget I would like to have for it. All right, let's go.
Right. It's very brave. I call very brave filmmaking. In the US, it's called Versus or VS.
It's called All Superheroes Must Die Everywhere.
Oh, is it?
No, like, Versus was the original title, and for some reason, IMDb just won't let it go.
Yeah, okay, so they won't let that go. Oh, all right.
It's very catchy and lets you know exactly what the movie's about, for better or worse.
That's right. Let's look at the story again. You've pretty much captured, I feel, the usual sort of plot lines and stories of what superheroes do, in that comic book sense. Are you more influenced by the comic stories of superheroes or more of the
the more recent films?
I mean, there's definitely some things in more recent films, but I grew up watching all of the animated series, like the cartoons, the comics when I was a kid, and I think that influenced a lot, such as Batman, the animated series in the early 90s. It really influenced it. The main thing we went into, we were really sick of just, like, I'm sick of seeing origin movies over and over again. It's like, we all know the stories. We know that you got bit by a radioactive spider, his parents died, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Why do we have to waste half a movie doing that until he actually becomes the superhero? I want to actually make a movie where it's actually, you get to see the heroes. Like, another big thing is, like, I hate it when we don't get to see them in their costume for, like, except for, like, 5 minutes of the movie. So I think there's only, like, 5 minutes of this movie where they're not wearing their costumes, which is something I really wanted.
It opens up pretty straight away with the whole, and in the costumes, I like the way that you get a sense of the vagueness or ambiguity of what's actually happening to them. Most superhero movies over-explain things, I feel.
Over-explain. I feel like you set yourself up for more questions. I always think it's more exciting to be thrown into a world instead of being beaten over the head with a story. Like, it's more interesting for me to find out who people are through their actions as the story goes. Kind of like, you know, the old classic movie, The Warriors, where it's like, we don't know who they are, but they just have to escape and we'll figure it out in the go. And that was kind of the vibe that we wanted for this.
No, that works. It was intriguing. Because it is so low budget and that sort of thing, was it hard or difficult to get people, to get the actors in to be part of this? And
absolutely. The whole thing, it was, everything was just such a wrestling around the schedule where it's like, because we only shot for 15 days as it was, and we shot in the middle of summer when there's only about 9 hours of darkness and the whole movie set at night. Now, if you do the math, it's only like 10 days of actual shooting. Within 15 days, we can only shoot 10 hours a day. And we shot everything with James Remar, who's a rickshaw. Everything was in 5 hours one afternoon, trying to plan it out so everything worked just fine. Everyone's availability was all over the map. In the first week of shooting, Lucas had to go do some more test screenings to be in our test stuff for X-Men, and we lost him for the first week, so we had to reschedule the whole first week of the movie, which was really tough trying to find things without him in it. So that was interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. And the 5 hours with just James. Now, well, how did he come aboard?
Well, I've been friends with him since I was about 10 years old because my dad does special effects on movies.
Okay.
And in the movie Mortal Kombat Annihilation, where he plays Raiden, he was really bored on set, and I was a kid with a Game Boy that had Tetris in it, and I was also bored, and we just bonded playing Tetris, and then, you know, I guess 13 years after that, we did the movie.
Oh, wow, okay. That's great.
Giving him a call and being like, hey, will you please be in this movie for me? Oh, I guess.
That's 5 hours he won't get back, but it looked like he really enjoyed it, though. Like, he got to really camp it up.
Yeah, he had a great time.
For the other cast members, the ones that do stand out, I mean, they all do. It's amazing. Got, of course, Charlie, who, I'm not going to spoil it, but we don't see enough of, literally. Shadow, played by Sophie Merkley, is it? Sledgesaw.
Yeah,
yeah, Sledge Saw, of course, was interesting. And Lucas Till. Are they all friends of yours, too? Because I feel that this is a family and friend production, too.
Yeah, everybody was friends.
Are they still friends?
Everybody's pretty much still friends at this point, I believe.
Now, there is, I will actually say to the listeners, there's quite a bit of violence in this. There's quite a bit of graphicness. Well, bit of blood, and we don't often see superheroes bleeding and carrying on like that.
Well, I wanted to humanize the superheroes, and I think, you know, the quickest way to do that is show them get beat up like regular people would if they went to the situation. As the movie goes, like, especially with my character, it just gets more beaten and bloody until it can barely move. But, you know, it would definitely help the tension rise and make the choices, you know, have more weight to them. Hi, this is Jason Tross from All Superheroes Must Die, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Excellent. Great. Thanks so much, Jason. Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy and 94.9, of course. And that was Dill's choice. Dill from Dillstick from New Gen. Tell us about that track, please.
Enter Shikari, Snake Pit. I don't know. When I'm gaming and that comes on my playlist, there's something about it. Like, I'll be in a bit of a pickle. Lately, I've been playing Mass Effect 2. So there's been a cut. You know, you get like hordes and hordes of like things coming at you. So when the hardcore bits come in, I just feel like I'm making my own video clip.
It's always been interesting. Like, you hear some of the songs they pick for games, and it's like, I could see what you went for, but it didn't work. Like, I've always wondered what it'd be like to soundtrack your own things. Like, driving songs, like, you know, there's always going to have, like, Going the Distance by Cake, and I love Cake, but I don't love that song for the 75th time. Like, there's plenty of songs that you could pick that would be something different at least.
Do you know what? I would love to set up a playlist for, like, one of the big, like, action games. I think that'd be really awesome. Like, to be like, hey, yeah, you know,
listen
to my playlist.
I did it ages ago for, oh, I can't remember what it was. It was on original Xbox. Like, this was when I had more time and I was younger. And
that's a while ago now.
That's a while ago now. but, yeah, I did exactly that. And I said, like I played through it once before and I'm like, I'll play through it again. And yeah, and I played it and I'm like, okay, so I'm going to just have it. So I'll space it out so that at certain points I can kind of have, like, you know, fill in between or have nothing and then press play and see how it sounds. And I was actually pretty happy with my choice.
That's the cool thing, like, that I loved about, like, the first generation Xbox was that you could bring in, you could import your own music library into, like, some of the games that would, like, allow that feature.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, can't remember the name of the game now. I'm having a complete mind fart. But, I can't think of the... Okay, sorry, kids. I'm sorry.
Well, that was Katamari did it. You could put your own music in Katamari, but why would you do that? It's Katamari. Yeah, almost the best part of that game is the music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I want Tarantino to do one. Quentin Tarantino to do the sounds for a game would be fun.
I'd like Quentin Tarantino to make a soundtrack for my life. I think that would be
awesome.
It's been done.
What he'll do, he'll look at what somebody else has done and then do his version of that. So
that would be cool. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam going all gamey with you tonight here on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
I'm Japanese, Nishimura Yoshihiro desu. Soshite.
And this is Mark Walko, and we are from Sushi Typhoon.
Yay! This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Yes, it is. Here we are in the studio with Dill of Dill's... Stick.
Dill
I was going to say shock in a moment. Kirsty and Jason, of course, from New Game Plus. In the background, you can hear Cheap Shot by Streets of Bass. Of course, they were out here for the Sound Bites, which was a really interesting chiptune, 8-bit
it's always
music
a good event, yeah.
Festival here in Melbourne. It's all happening.
I just think it's a really awesome genre. I mean, just how they can, like, just go crazy just with the 8-bit sounds, video game sounds. I mean, it's just so nostalgic, but at the same time, really innovative as well.
I know. And pulls apart things. Like, you know, if you're someone who has an old, old consoles and things like that, just keep them under lock and key. Because around these people, they will tear it apart.
On a similar tangent, like, I remember seeing Devo in concert, and so playing all their songs, blah, 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 and then they got to some of their really old hits, and they changed synthesizers. Like, they brought out his old one from, like, 1975, and, like, plonked it. That thing was old school, and it's like, and you could see them, like, handling it with the other one. They're kind of like,
who cares? Size of a truck.
Yeah, who cares? Probably. We can buy another one. Yeah, well, it was huge, and so they, like, lowered it on. But you just can't get the same noise. And I think it's the same when they rip apart the consoles and use the sound cards. It's like, you can replicate it to an extent, but it's you know, it's the old record argument. Like, there's just a warmth you can't get elsewhere.
That vinyl. Yeah. Or in this case, plastic.
Well, you know.
Fuses and...
Hipsters don't know any better. They've got to look into it. So.
We love all those hipsters out there. I think.
I love how you looked at me then.
Yeah. I don't know. I looked to you. You don't have a beard, but Jason has a beard. Come on, Jason. Are you the long haired hipster?
You know, this is starting to get to me. They've started to steal my look, and it's killing me because I keep getting, oh, you're just another hipster. I'm like,
aren't you wearing your punching jacket or
no? No, that's my other one. That's my Melbourne Ice, Go the Ice, Australian Ice Hockey.
Wow, they have one?
And they've got, it's great. Obviously. Like, honestly, they're pretty good, but and it's got like the Southern Cross on there, so it's like, that's my go to war jacket. You know, that's how it works, isn't it? Yeah.
Put your colours on, or
he's got to put the stick on the back of his ute.
He's got a ute.
No, God, no, give me some credit.
I believe that for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
a bit scared.
Oh yeah,
he's got like the absolute polar opposite of a ute.
Yeah, yeah,
I think. There's nothing more opposite to a ute than his car.
Yeah. All right, now Kirsty, interesting. Off air, we were talking a little bit about the cosplay you were involved with at PAX.
Yes.
What happened there?
Really fun. Well, they didn't actually have a cosplay competition, but you can't hold a nerd down. So we're always going to cosplay at every event we go to. And I was part of and hosted a cosplay panel where I invited a bunch of cosplayers from, luckily, a bunch of different backgrounds. I had the guy who runs Slimat for Madman, who runs the Madman National Cosplay Championships, I had two girls who are currently in Japan representing Australia for the World Cosplay Summit, Ali and Kay, go girls.
Yeah. And I had they're really cool mm-hmm. girls.
Oh,
too,
they're
yeah.
amazing, amazing people. And I had the Vixen Gamer, Claire Costigan from Sydney, who's you know, built up a reputation as, you know, a very beautiful woman who wears some really awesome kind of cosplays, much more gaming related. So we had this cool panel.
Very slave point, yeah.
Yeah. Don't hold it against her. So we were all there. We had this great panel and a whole bunch of cosplayers came along. And then we got some great conversation going afterwards. I had a girl come up to me in tears saying, thank you so much for this panel. You know, I feel that as a larger woman, I've always been very conscious about dressing up. You know, I've been really scared. But now you guys have given me the confidence to go out there and do it. I said, great, that's what we want. And as the kind of crowd dispersed and people took photos because all of us were there in costume, one of the enforcers came up to me and he was the head of security, it turns out, and told me that one of the cosplayers who'd come to our panel had been groped by an attendee, and he asked if we knew anything about it, and I said no, and he said, well, you know, firstly, you know, if you, you know, see this guy, you know, please alert us instantly. We want him out. This is not what PAX is about.
He was cosplaying as someone, wasn't he, or something like
that? Okay, yeah, no, he was in the kilt, wasn't he?
No, not the enforcer, the guy. Yeah.
The guy who was pinching people? Yeah. I'm not 100% sure if he was.
But he was
cosplayer.
Dressed in a particular way, that
yeah,
was.
Yeah, he was dressed in a distinctive fashion. Mm. So they were looking for this guy. And the enforcer, you know, wanted to chat to us also. He's like, thanks about your positive messages in the panel about not accepting harassment. We don't accept it here, blah, blah, blah. About 20 minutes later in the main hall, the same enforcer came up to see me and said, look, we managed to catch the guy. He actually groped another cosplayer and he's been turfed out. Him and his mate are gone. We don't accept that kind of behaviour here. And if you see the Chun-Li cosplayer who was initially inappropriately accosted by this person, please let her know that this person has been ejected from the venue. And I absolutely loved his attitude. He said it in a completely non-condescending manner. He wanted to open up a discussion with me and the people around me about appropriate behaviour at his event. He was proud of his work and he was really passionate about getting that person ejected from the convention.
That's so that there was that onus, and that onus did come from I guess like the leadership and like the management at the event as well, because that's something that you want to have at one of these events. You want to know that it's
like
safe.
Well, this guy actually cares. Yeah. Like, this guy really, and he was like personally affronted that somebody at this event had done this to an innocent party.
And I think you need that something, particularly because we go to so many conventions, you know, we go to Manifest and that kind of stuff, and it's so hard to kind of police that. Like, you get the horrible photographers who aren't even trying to hide what they're doing. You're like, it's kind of snap, 90, you know, 45 degree angle down, snap. The
discreet knot.
Well, that's what, you know, at least, I would say at least be subtle, but it's the one time where it's kind of like, well, no, it's kind of better that we know you're a scumbag from the get-go. But
and I think that's the strength of PAX, because PAX, as we said earlier, has the focus from the community up, doesn't come from the, you know, the companies down, whereas EBX, Supernova is a bit of the middle ground
yeah.
But PAX is all about what can benefit the community, and it was great to see that some of these enforcers and organisers were highly passionate about making sure that the community had the best experience.
I thought you were going to say highly passionate.
Stop. Look,
I won't stop.
No, you won't. It's your show. You can do what you want. The other thing as well is the one that got to me with that was I had a really good train of thought then, and then it's gone. I can't remember it.
Go to something else. That's, let's go to something else.
The first time that's ever happened. That's how bad that pun was.
The other interesting thing about PAX that's been brought up a couple of times as well is, of course, the popularity of the panels.
I remember what it is.
Wait, you got it?
Yeah, Booth Babes. The guys from PAX hate Booth Babes, and they were really...
They were at Oz Comic Con, I hate to say. Yeah. There was a Booth Babe element there.
It's majority of the PC gamers, because it's going to sound horrible, but they know their market. They know that they're the... It's the same thing as car nerds. They're generally awkward with women. Yeah, they sit in their garages and their dens, and they just play on their cars. It's one-to-one analogous as far as car. The same mindset that goes into building cars is the same mindset that goes into building PCs. So I know the pretty girls are going to work. But Jerry and Thing came out and said, you probably didn't understand what we said about this. We said no. And they were like, they weren't forceful and they weren't rude, but they were very kind of, this is not what
That's what I was worried about initially. I thought, oh, am I going to go to this? It's going to be a massive commercial sort of venture. And we're going to see Booth Babes. And I thought, what do you say? How am I going to do that? I don't want to photograph them. I don't want to be part of that. And I don't want to, you know, I certainly don't want that as part.
The one thing I'll say about the World of Tanks one, the Wargaming ones, was the girls he picked ones who actually had played the game and knew what they were talking about. So at the very least, like, they're pretty, but they know what they're talking about. If they ask a question about the game, they're actually going to know the answer. And as strange as that sounds, at least that's something. Like, at least it's not just, why are you here? I'm here because I have boobs and I'm pretty. Oh, that's fantastic.
Which sounds like Tokyo Game Show.
Tokyo Game Show.
Perfect segue. If you don't like booth babes, don't go to Tokyo Game Show. Or what's the Chinese game show?
Oh,
that's meant even worse. Yeah. Tokyo Game Show almost prides itself on its booth babes. It was every single booth.
Each booth I have like 40.
Is that where you're going next, you guys?
Yes. That is our next stop. Perfect segue. We're off to Tokyo for Tokyo Game Show 2013. We were lucky enough to go last year. We really enjoyed the experience because, well, we love Tokyo as well. We just love Japan. And so we're going to go again this year. And Tokyo Game Show is something that you can't comprehend. It is 200,000 people attending over 2 days.
So PAX had 36,000, I think, each day. This is 200,000 on the public days.
So it's literally rivers of people where you can't move. You must, just join this movement and just get carried along with
my
the wave.
My question is the nerd stank. The nerd stank.
It's there, but the Japanese are a lot more. I mean, in my bag, I've got a thing from Daiso that I bought, which is effectively sanitary wipes for like your arms and stuff if you start to smell. So it's kind of like what you normally use for like, you know, wet toilets, but they're specifically designed for like your more sensitive areas.
Wow.
So, so if you're in an office and you're starting to stank the joint out, you go to the bathroom, you use those, bin it.
I'm vibing.
And Japan's also good. Japan's also used to humidity. It gets super hot.
You should see her hair. Just like she turns from like straight hair like it is now to like Jungle Boogie.
Like, I've got like full afro. I'm like Foxy Love. It's
crazy.
Wow,
you need platforms.
Yes.
I mean, no, platform shoes, not different platforms to play with.
Yes.
No, we got it. We got it. It was good. It was good.
It was funny. It was clever.
All right. More shortly. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy and 94.9.
This is Benjamin Williams from GamerCon in San Francisco, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Yes, this is indeed. Now, of course, GamerCon is now called GamerX. They went through a bit of a trial there with copyright and so forth. But the reason I've mentioned that and played Ben there from GamerX, as it is now called, is because this weekend, if you are in the beautiful city of San Francisco, US of A, there is something called GamerX. It's a two-day LGBTIQ-orientated gaming and geek culture, or gamer with a Y, convention. It's scheduled this weekend, the 3rd to the 4th, 2013, of course, as I mentioned, in San Fran, California. And organisers have said that the event is about making gay gamers not feeling that they're left out or isolated, and bringing together the unifying force, I guess, of that everybody is equal, it's a safe place. Again, pretty much similar to what Kirsty was saying with how women and people of the female persuasion sometimes feel at conventions a little bit isolated and preyed upon in some ways. The same thing can happen for LGBTIQ people. So that's a pretty exciting weekend coming up with GamerX, previously known as GamerCon. It's, as we know, gaming is now the largest entertainment industry worldwide in the globe. And so it's about time, I think, that something like this, which is fun, has some great interesting panels, and it's inclusive. You can also socialize and meet other queer people out there who play games, and there will be a DJ. So what more do you need? I hope it's chip tunes. So that's this weekend.
It's going to be, let's face it.
It should be really a lot of fun.
They have all their fun in San Francisco. It's not
I
fair.
Think they do. But before we do head on to the single life, which is somewhere I know really well, and that's with John and Michelle coming up shortly, I want to say thanks to the New Game Plus peoples.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for having us again.
Jason and Kirsty, where can people go to have a look?
Well, the best place to check it out is our website, www.newgameplus.tv.
Or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/newgameplustv.
Or if you're of that persuasion, you can follow us on Twitter, @newgameplustv. We're also on air, 10:30 p.m. Mondays on C31 Melbourne.
And 9:30 Thursdays on TBS. And there is a repeat of us on Monday, on Friday night.
At like midnight.
Yeah, no, so like Saturday mornings at 12:01 on the, like,
it's the episode I catch.
Yeah, it's, that's the one to watch because we normally do a stream before it and stuff. It's good fun.
So. That's so good to have you guys on. Now, if you want to hear more of Kirsty and Jason going for it, chatting about the birth of New Game Plus and all the things that have happened since a year, over a year now that they were born, you can go to the Joy site, joy.org.au, and head to the podcast. We've got a couple up there and one more, number three is to come. And Dylan, great to have you on board.
Thank you. And if you want to hear more of my dulcet tones, I'll be chilling out with Shannon on the Chappelle Show this weekend from 5 till 7. That's right, 2 hours worth of hip-hop for your ears.
Word.
We'll be twerking. Shannon and I will be twerking in studio.
Shut up.
That's cool. Now, next week, we're doing Oz Comics. It is Osmosis with Emmett O'Krana and Andy Hawkins back with Behind the Mask, looking at more of the international commercial comic scene. So it'll be Aussie Comics versus what's happening in the rest of the world. That's on Sci-Fi and Squeam, and it's going to be August. So tune in.
Oh, my God.
And enjoy. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.